Now, once more, the sequence for today's classes will be first on church history and then on the third article of the Creed. And not coincidentally, our church history will be, you'd never guess, on Halloween, which dramatically symbolizes the widespread de-Catholicization of the Western world. And the second part of our classes will be on the third article of the Creed, which is on the Blessed Virgin Mary. And with that, we'll have an outline, a chart. Then, if there are persons here who contributed to this handbook on the teaching of faith for parents and teachers, if there are, then they, of course, deserve a complimentary copy. Otherwise, I bought about 20 copies here, and they will be on sale for what they cost us to Xerox, namely $5. Before Christmas, we hope to have about 20,000 printed. As you may know, last week I went to Scranton, Pennsylvania, after over a year's preparation, to attend the first convention in 30 years of the Eucharistic Crusade, which is a division or branch of the Apostleship of Prayer, and more specifically, for children, to promote devotion to the Holy Eucharist, to teach the faith, to inspire the children in being apostles already from childhood, and to pray, and all under the aegis of the Sacred Heart. 9 nations in the world are so far doing this, and my Jesuit general told me he wants us back in the United States and gave me the orders, very happy to carry them out, of bringing the Eucharistic Crusade back into the United States. Pray, however, we have 35 dioceses these are copies of the Apostleship of Prayer Monthly Intentions for 1995. I'd rather not do this during class, but then if you take one, then there probably would be enough, especially for one member of a family. That's the intentions of the Holy Father, and by the way, the Pope personally and prayerfully chooses these intentions for each month of the year. And there are always 2 sets of intentions, the general intentions and the mission intentions. For example, the January general intention for 1995 is the gift of distinguishing true from false cultural values. Is that ever important? And the January mission intention is catechetical reformation, or better, catechetical formation that is both missionary and ecumenical. My friends, that's a hard, very hard combination. In other words, how to be friendly with Muslims, kind, Christian, charitable, at the same time to try to convert them to Christianity. In any case, you've got about 20 sets here. Thanks, Bill. So I would say these are available, 130 pages, and they are deeply personal contributions on how to teach, share faith, develop the faith, mainly put together my parents, because we are restoring the Eucharistic Crusade in the United States, and this is one step in that direction. Then, to remind some of you, as we come to the close of the month of October, there is still no charge for these. The Secret of the Rosary by St. Louis de Montfort, in any case, copies are still left, and this time, no charge. Then, on my way to Chicago last Friday, my pickup at the airport gave me a copy of the present Holy Father's latest book, Crossing the Threshold of Hope. Worth reading. I gave my first lecture on this book last Friday. Holy Father says things that you won't find elsewhere in print. As you may know, this book was a second thought. It was to have been a series of television broadcasts by the Holy Father in Italy. But the series did not come off. The Holy Father asked the journalist who was going to interview him on television, would he please write out the questions? The questions then became the theme of each chapter in this book. The publisher is Knopf, K-N-O-F-F, Alfred Knopf. And the price I've got here is $20. On the other hand, this was a gift to me. And the party told me, at least for a while, there was a 40% discount. You might, if you want to, save money. You might want to call up my friend who got the 40% discount in Chicago. His phone number. He may not appreciate this. His name is Bill Fairman. Fairman, one word. His phone number is 708-424-4550. 708-424-4550. Well, now, Marion, would you want to make the call?
I'll make the call.
And then you give your phone number. So, hoping that discount is still available from a Chicago publisher, in any case, it was 40% last Friday still. Hopefully, it'll still be intact. As he gave me a copy, he told me I got a 40% discount. It's worth reading, though. Because I repeat, the Holy Father says things you won't find elsewhere in print. Also explains, by the way, what so many people have criticized. Here's what looks like leniency in dealing, say, with dissenters and heretics. In any case, read the book. Then, seminary. I went to the seminary, Sacred Heart Seminary, had my picture taken. Several times I just didn't show up for the photograph They kept after me. Finally, it became a matter of conscience. Well, having both my picture taken, I thought I'd do a little apostolic work. So I went to the bookstore of the seminary and found an unusual assortment of books. I bought, among others, Catholicism by my dear friend Richard McBrien. This is an update on his former book, and he says the former book sold 150,000 copies. In any case, I got a discount. 35 dollars. I think I paid 28 for it. But I need books like this to refute what they call themselves dissenters. But I looked in the index. To see what names were listed. And, well, I saw two entries for Harton, John A. So I figured. If I'm in the book, I think I should buy a copy. In any case, he hasn't really changed. Pray for Richard McBrien. He has done incalculable damage to the Catholic Church in the United States. As you see, this is not an ordinary announcement. I know I am being taped. One last item. I'm not sure how many of you people get or know about the Human Life Review. How many of you get the magazine? It costs, I'm not sure, you know, $20 a year. Comes out four times a year. But it's worth it. This issue is about 96 pages. So it comes to about 400 pages for the year. It is, by all odds, the best, the most penetrating and revealing publication in any language on the pro-life movement. Anyone engaged in the pro-life movement, I would say, has a duty either to subscribe to the magazine or have access to it on a regular basis. The editor is a good friend of mine in New York. I encouraged him when he first started this, and I get my own copies gratis and even sent first class. In any case, I highly recommend this publication. This is the fall issue. As I mentioned, our next lecture then will be on the third article of the Creed, which is on Our Lady. Our present lecture is on Halloween. And it will be a lecture that I finished this morning, drawing on printed matter from sources that I consulted, although in drawing on those sources, I would change, remove, and of course add as I thought was necessary. Simply, Halloween. Halloween typifies a phenomenon that has become increasingly common in the Anglo-Saxon world. It is a phenomenon of one's Christian and even Catholic feasts and celebrations becoming paganized. The two most notorious are, of course, Christmas and Easter. Christmas trees and Santa Claus are the two popular symbols of what should be the feast of the birth of Jesus Christ. Easter is associated with rabbits and a new wardrobe for spring, whereas the feast of Christ's resurrection is all but ignored outside of strictly Christian communities. Since the beginning of television in 1941, organized television in our country, until about 1980, so that's about 40 years, all the Easter shows were exclusively about pagan and non-Christian events or symbols. Finally, through organized Christian effort and pressure, boycotting these stations, finally, they broke down and began giving little tidbits about the meaning of Easter. 40 years of dead silence on television in Chicago about the real meaning of Easter Sunday. Halloween, though not commonly known to be such, is actually even more notorious. It symbolizes what has happened in one's Catholic countries, thanks in large measure to the rise of anti-Catholic Protestantism in the 16th century. And whatever meaning you associate with Protestantism, be sure you don't forget that historically, Protestantism, the very name, is derived from protest against the Catholic Church. That's what Protestantism means historically. It's a protest against the Catholic Church and her teachings. The birthday of Protestantism is October the 31st, 1517, the vigil of the Feast of All Saints. On that day, Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses, as he called them, to the church door of the Castle of Wittenberg in Germany. Amongst, Luther denied the church's right to give absolution from sins in the name of Christ. 3 years later, Luther was condemned by Pope Leo X as a heretic. And before Luther's death, in 1546, something like one-third of Europe was lost to the Catholic Church. And it all began on Halloween, October 31st, 1517. In other words, in the mind of every Protestant, having taught, as I've told so many of you, in six Protestant seminaries, including the Lutheran School of Theology, for 7 years. And I never for a moment compromised on Catholicism. You think after 3 days they would throw me out bodily? Wow. I love Protestants. My widowed mother took in boarders, women boarders. And the first two boarders that stayed with us till I was, 16, were two Lutheran girls. I heard about Martin Luther by the age of 3. I'm sure they were the only Lutherans in the United States then, Susan and Judith, who abstained from meat on Fridays. My mother told them. My boys asking embarrassing questions. Want to stay here? Talk to your pastor. No meat on Fridays. Pastor said, okay, so. I love Protestants, but I sure know the difference. Protestantism is not Catholicism. In the history of the world, therefore, the Vigil of All Saints is the birthday of Protestantism. The very name, Halloween, as we know, meant and should still mean, dear Lord, should still mean, as I've told so many audiences, and especially the missionaries of charity, no matter what country I teach them, I tell them, sisters, and most of them, by the way, when I ask them, how many of you spoke English as your native language at home? Almost never puts up her hand. So I ask, how many of you did not speak English at home? Everybody puts up her hand. I put up mine too. I never spoke English at home. Never. Then I tell them, sisters, as I told Mother Teresa more than once, among your responsibilities, and English is the official language of the missionaries of charity, one of your responsibilities is to Catholicize the English language. They are now in 100 countries. Sisters from Tanzania, from Zambia, from you name it, some unpronounceable names of the places they're from, but they've got to learn English. If they can't learn English, they don't have a vocation to that community. Catholicize the language. English is the most, not just un-Catholic, English is the most anti-Catholic language in human history. Do you hear me? English is the most anti-Catholic language in human history. English literature, libraries, tens of thousands of books written by those who not only did not share our Catholic faith, but were brought up from most of them, in infancy, in an atmosphere that was, to put it mildly, not friendly to the Catholic Church. The Feast of All Saints and the corresponding, and was a vigil of All Saints, the 31st of October before the 1st of November, middle of the 5th century. So it's over 1,500 years. And this vigil of the solemn feast of All Saints has now become a day of fun and prankish trickery. Oh, as we'll explain before this lecture is over, it will not be an ordinary lecture, I assure you. Not coincidentally, the followers of Martin Luther not only dropped the Feast of All Saints, they denied, from the very beginning, they denied the veneration of saints and called it superstition. It is Protestant heresy to honor the saints. Logically, then, the Vigil of All Saints became a day of mockery of the veneration of saints, or invoking their intercession in heaven with God. But there are no saints in heaven. This is a cardinal principle of both Luther and John Calvin. My plan for this conference, and this, by the way, is still the introduction. My plan for this conference is to cover the following areas of an immense subject. My plan is to trace the history of Halloween before the dawn of Christianity, its continued practice where Christianity had not taken a firm root, and its resurgence as pagan folklore, where Catholic Christianity was weakened or suppressed by political power. And something of the responsibility of Catholics in English-speaking countries to restore Halloween to its truly Christian significance. The word itself, Halloween, spelled as we know with two L's and two E's, which is literally All Hallows, Even. In other words, All Hallows means All Saints. In Old English, Hallows means saint. All Hallows means All Saints. And E-N, double E-N, is the abbreviation for even, or evening, or the night before. In its strictly religious aspect, this is known as the Vigil of Hallowmas, or All Saints' Day, November the 1st, and observed by the Roman Catholic, and to remind ourselves also, thank God, by the Anglicans. We mentioned that Pope Gregory III assigned this date for celebrating the feast when he consecrated a chapel in St. Peter's Basilica, and his successor then extended the feast to the whole church. Students of folklore believe that the non-Christian customs of Halloween, that they precede even the origins of Christianity, and more specifically, they are traced to the Roman harvest festival of Pomona and of Druidism. Pomona in the Roman Empire and Druidism in Germany, Scotland, and Ireland before the dawn of Christianity. These influences, so scholars tell us, are inferred from the use of nuts as traditional Halloween fruits and from the figures of witches, black cats, and skeletons, which were associated among the pagans before Christ. Hear this. In Latin countries, the evening of October the 31st is observed only as a religious occasion. But in Great Britain, that's where it got started. In Great Britain, and then exported to Ireland and the United States, ancient Halloween pagan customs have been restored alongside of the Christian observance. Evidence that Halloween reflects influences from the two sources we identified, namely from the goddess Pomona and from Druidism, is seen in the fact that as Catholicism was suppressed by Henry VIII and his successors, and remember, suppressed under persecution, what happened? Some of the hidden paganism among the people before the dawn of Christianity then rose to the surface. For example, the spirits of the departed were believed to visit their kinsmen in search of warmth and good cheer as winter approached. It was also the period for threshing and a food preparation for the winter season. Now, let me just touch on one aspect we won't have time to go into in detail. Over the centuries, the church has made a consistent effort, which, by the way, is brought out very clearly in this book by the Holy Father, that as far as possible, the church would keep, I repeat, as far as possible, the church would keep, for example, even the date of certain feasts or festivals. For example, the principal festival, which was dedicated to the sun god, which was the name which then Christianity adapted, and in fact even adopted, for the Lord's Day, namely Sunday. So here, the church then, we don't want to say built on a stake, it would be a mistake, but used the externals of certain, call them festivities, certain practices of the pagans before they were Christianized. But then, thoroughly baptized, not just the feast, but the meaning behind the feast, in such a way the people would not have to simply discard the feast as such, but the meaning of the feast. This is crucially important. And as I read the pages in the Holy Father's book, keep that in mind. In other words, under divine guidance, the church tries, rather than crush or suppress or wipe out what is good among the people, to rather, once the people are themselves converted, to build on what is good. It better be good, however, and then give the people, as in this case, notice what the church did. Surely, the end of October, the beginning of November, is, well, the time of the harvest. And the church then, building on that, would keep the commemoration of thanking God for the good that he had done. And of course, what's the most important harvest? My dears natives, somebody can answer this question. What's the most important harvest in the mind of God? The most important harvest that he wants is souls. Souls. The souls that made it. And the Feast of All Saints, as the Church has been teaching over the centuries, is not just of canonized saints, but of all those who reached heaven. And the feast, as we'll explain, I may not have all the time. I've got more here, I think, than I have room for in one lecture. Well, then the poor souls the day after, for those who are still suffering in purgatory. And that's the highest and most sublime harvest which the Church wants all of us to commemorate. We go on. There is little doubt that the Church sought to either eliminate, but better, supplant the pagan festival of the dead, which, for example, would even expect the dead to visit. Remember we said this before? Visit their living relatives, well, this time of the year. And this is what the Protestants or comparative religionists say the Church then to replace the pagan practice of recalling the dead, even coming back and appearing to their still living friends on earth, introduced the Feast of All Souls. As Christianity spread gradually over Europe and the British Isles, it tried, and I would say quite successfully, but note my language, quite successfully, to displace pre-existing pagan cults devoted to the worship of certain pagan gods. One thing we should remember, and the years of teaching theology to my own judges, 25 years to be exact. I've told them that in the northern countries, and I mean in general north of the Alps, Germany, parts of Switzerland, and of course, Norway, Sweden, Finland, England, Scotland, Wales, Ireland. The missionary effort, though remarkably successful, had not been, and I think I may even use the verb, has not been as effective as in the Mediterranean world, or say as successful as it had been in Africa. For example, in 325, the first general council of the church, which condemned, remember, Arius, who denied Christ's divinity. Now all the bishops assembled at Nicaea condemned Arius. The numbers we don't know for sure. Not the majority, but at least a sizable minority went back home to the diocese and sided with Arius, who denied Christ's divinity. And with almost no exception, they were from the northern, what we now call Anglo-Saxon countries. Do you hear me? Date, 325 AD. It is nothing coincidental by any means. In the years of teaching theology, oh, how I stressed, is not just in the past generation or two, but over the centuries, the most devastating heresies have come from those same countries. And now, sad to say, pains me to say it, but say it I must. Not excluding Ireland, am I clear? When the Irish turn heretics, they become militant. By the end of the Middle Ages, the celebration of All Hallows, All Hallows Eve, or popularly Halloween. Even to use the word Halloween in a religious context seems to almost, well, blaspheme the name, which shows how deeply, deeply our Anglo-Saxon culture has been de-Catholicized. By the end of the Middle Ages, the celebration of All Hallows Eve was an established part of the annual calendar of the Roman Catholic Church. Then came Protestantism, or as its sympathizers call it, the Reformation. Never, unless you're in a daze and not responsible for what you're saying, never use the word, never, Reformation, to speak of Protestantism. Never. There was only one Reformation. That was the Reformation of the Catholic Church. But you see how the very words have penetrated our English vocabulary. As I've said more than once, I'm sure to you too, but after 15 years of teaching theology in Latin to my Jesuit priests and scholastics, and then I was told by superiors, John, come this September, you've got to teach theology in English. Are you sure? Yes, it must be English. My greatest, I mean this, my greatest mortification in the priesthood. And the reason is not subjective on my part. The English language is simply not a vehicle for Catholicism. Do you still hear me? Just isn't. Where they use words that people don't ordinarily use, borrowed from the Latin, or you use, well, Anglo-Saxon words, which have another meaning of the dictionary, and you explain and re-explain what you really mean. By that time, you lost your class. After the so-called Reformation, Protestants rejected this feast. That is a feast of both All Saints and its vigil, along with other important ones, such as Christmas and Easter. Do you hear me? And where Christmas and Easter have returned as feasts is only because of the Catholic Church. Do you still hear me? Halloween folk customs of pagan origin then, what happened? They came back. Where? In England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales and the Shetland Islands. In these places, the inhabitants lighted bonfires on hilltops on the eve of October the 31st and played Halloween games. They also engaged in divination by such means as pulling kale, placing stones or nuts in the fire, and throwing a shoe over the house. Do they still do that in the United States? Some divination occurred even as the church, even on the church porch, which was believed to be an especially reliable place to learn of future events. In other words, the thesis behind this lecture is that as Catholicism in this was suppressed in the Anglo-Saxon world, the paganism behind what then became the Feast of All Saints and its vigil all the paganism returned, and Halloween now, the name has remained Christian. But how many people even know what Halloween means? Pranks and mischief also became common on Halloween. And I keep repeating, always the primary place was Great Britain. And as we know, by the middle of the 20th century, the largest empire in world history, let me repeat, the largest empire in world history was the British Empire. Control of hundreds of millions of people, much of Africa, a large part of Asia, the whole of India, Australia. And of course, with the dissemination of the English language as the German political leader Bismarck was asked on one occasion, and what a question to be asked, and what an answer to give. He was asked, what do you consider the single most important fact of modern history? The single most important fact of modern history? Without hesitation, the single most important fact of modern history is that England and the United States speak the same language. We Americans think, oh, how wrong can you be? We think we have been liberated from England. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Ideologically, we are under control. I know every syllable of what I am saying. How well I know. Immigrants from Great Britain and, of course, when we speak of Great Britain, it doesn't mean just England. Though I must say, the longest stay I've had in England, though I'm in Europe quite often, was 24 hours recently. The flight was now leaving, so I had to stay in a hotel overnight. But I watched for two things during my stay in London, so that I could talk about it. Looked around to see, as far as I could tell, of the people that I saw, and I kept counting my tens, how many people out of 10 seemed to be, well, English or British. My calculation is less than 3. 70% of the people of England are no longer British. All kinds of other countries, but no longer England. And not just, you might say, population-wise, in terms of numbers, but the ideas, that The English-speaking world has had, for the last 4.5 centuries, slowly, but very slowly, and most English-speaking Catholics have no idea what's going on. +90% of the books published in English, what a safe statement, not Catholic. In other words, and with this I close, immigrants from England or English-speaking, English-dominated countries brought the pagan practices that have been in vogue from before the time of Christ, especially to the United States. During the latter decades of the 19th century, some effort was made in the United States to control the pranks, because some became, if not major, at least in some cities, over-enthusiastic celebrants would cause great harm, especially those whom they disliked. The bottom line is that Halloween is a return of unqualified paganism into cultures where Protestantism has de-Catholicized a nation and removed one of the clearest signs of an authentic Catholic mentality, namely the veneration of the saints. I have a short paragraph conclusion, our responsibility. Halloween has become so built into our national culture that it is simply taken for granted. Almost nobody knows or seems to care about this return of a pagan custom into what was once a Christian nation. Our responsibility is to do whatever we can to restore Halloween. What am I saying? And I'm being taped to top it off. To restore Halloween to its Catholic place in the church's calendar. How? Know the saints. As John Calvin wrote, and he is the genius behind Protestantism, there are no saints. There are no saints. To invoke the saints, there's one so-called Protestant confession after another. To invoke the saints is blasphemy. Our Catholic responsibility, know the saints whom we do believe in. Yet at least, even one small book on the life of either us saints or of the saints, say, of the calendar year, know the saints, promote the writing of the saints. They have written extensively. Publicize the lives of the saints. This is not an exaggeration. Before my ordination, and just as well, I did not have a Xerox machine or some other way of making copies. I would write them out on little cards that I would then use, as I have over the years, over 5,000 quotations from the saints before my ordination. Except for these saints, I mean this with all my heart, I wouldn't be standing here. Before God, this is one of the true reasons why the church canonizes saints. One is to assure us that a canonized saint is infallibly in heaven. And secondly, that we might read, learn, and how the saints thought, how they lived, and imitate their virtues. When I first read this, over 40 years ago, that St. Alphonsus Liguori took a vow never to lose a moment of time. It changed my life. We need the saints. Know them, promote them, publicize their lives. Use the media to make the saints known, invoked, and imitated by others. And you mothers and fathers, all I can tell you is, my mother managed to finish the first 5 grades in grammar school in Europe. One reason over the years, I've often asked my audiences 2 questions. I can ask you, how would you answer this? Are all educated people intelligent? Yes or no? Are all educated people intelligent?
No.
No. No. And the most stupid are so many PhDs. Are you sure the machine is working for the videotaping? Next question. If not all educated people are intelligent, are all intelligent people educated? And given the conditions of education in our country, it's just as well. Memorize the sayings of the saints. I didn't expect to make this, but let me do this. I'm not quite sure it's sometime in November that our next class is. Who knows when we meet the next time? November the?
13th.
15th? 13th. November the? 13th. November the 13th, okay. So November the 13th. I would like to have all of you, because I trust your integrity, and let me make it as easy as I can. Would you please turn in three quotations from saints, three saints' quotations. Identify the saint and put your name on too. Okay. And then I'd like to have you promise that you'll memorize what you have written down. Over the years in teaching priests, I tell them there is nothing more valuable than to memorize as much as you can of the Bible, especially the New Testament, and from the writings of the saints. We need it. And one last recommendation. Use the occasion of Halloween to restore saints to their place in our lives and national history. And I thank you for the opportunity of speaking on Halloween as Halloween really should be spoken of as the vigil of all the saints. Thank you for listening. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. And let's meet, if you don't mind, in 15 minutes, okay?